Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming today from our studios out of New York City. We're going to be talking about green tea and how it improves your fat levels in the body, especially women. University of Minnesota, as well as University of Pittsburgh studies, how your immune system uses the bacteria, the good bacteria in your gut, to control your glucose metabolism, Oregon State University. We're going to look at how citrus fruit contains nutrients that activate your cancer-killing cells. That could save a lot of lives. And also how mostly a meat-based high-protein diet, that's the average American diet, is directly linked to heart failure, especially in women. And that's from the Albert Medical School at Brown University, and more on health and healing. Then we're going to hear from a woman who decided to do some rap music without misogyny, without racist lyrics, without the intent to offend anyone, but rather to enlighten everyone. I think you'll find it interesting. And then we're going to have a little update that was not in any of the information surrounding the mainstream media's coverage of Julian Assange. But there is a couple things at the end that you should remember. The voices you'll be hearing are voices from both the left, the corporate left, including those who have programs on MSNBC, and those who have been in the House, such as Newt Gingrich, and who's now a special advisor to Trump. I think you should hear what they think about Julian Assange. And now that Trump is president, or when Obama was president, and when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, how she actually wanted to drone him. Actually, in one of the WikiLeaks, is this question: can we drone him? Why didn't the media pick up on that? Also, we are all familiar with, at least those who saw, Sunday night's 60 Minutes piece where Donald Trump was asked, well, didn't you say you were going to drain the swamp and not have lobbyists? One thing that we can do on this program, since we have a great deal of scholarship, is we will then, on a regular basis, inform you of the choices and who these people really are. Who do they really represent? Because otherwise it's just a name. No one knows who these people are. We do. And today I'm going to give you the background on several of these people who are interested in being in this Trump administration and probably will. But what if we told you enough so that you saw that they were all corporate lobbyists? They all represented special interests. They all would allow us to have a greater likelihood of going to war with Russia, funding and enabling Israel to attack Iran, then maybe that becomes an issue that you can deal with in your own ways or collectively, where we can begin to protest this. And I'll also show you why I believe that if we start looking at what we can do in small groups at the local level, and we work together cooperatively, we're far more likely to have some positive outcomes. And I'll give you actual examples of that, where those who were angry and decided, you know, well, it's over, wait till next time, and then they go away. But when you go away, all the people that you resented and all the people who shouldn't have had power, every single day, 24/7, they have a whole army of people implementing programs that don't benefit you. So what if we were awake and monitoring them 24/7? And on a regular weekly basis, we gave you a report card. Here's what they've done that's wrong. Here's what they've done that's right. Here's what they should be doing. And here's how we can remind them we're watching you and everything you do that breaks your promises to the American public, and that's harmful to the world, that jeopardizes peace. We're going to remind you and the media. For years, every single one of my more than 50 award-winning documentaries on very important issues, issues that most people would agree deserve an opportunity to be explored, such as the politics of medicine, the drugging of our children, the quality of the American diet, the destruction of our environment, the exploitation of the medical system to the pharmaceutical interest, but against the patient. Well, every single one of these was given along with supporting articles, original articles, fully vetted. And just so you understand, when I talk about fully vetted, I want to give you an idea that when it comes to presenting information, we go overboard to find the research that is the most consistent and accurate and honest. When I was, for 25 years, a quarter of a century, I was writing 2 to 3 major articles a year. And these were cover stories, so they got a lot of attention, a lot of views. And the attorney, a man named Grupman, who was very powerful in that company, he says, "We're afraid that you're taking on such controversial topics and you're taking on all these sacred cows like the cancer industry. We could get sued. We could lose our advertising." And I said, "Well, they can't sue you if you're telling the truth and you can verify it." So they hired a top attorney, and that's all this person did was verify every fact that I wrote. And this person wasn't political. They simply would not allow a single sentence in an article, and these were long articles, unless I had absolute, irrefutable, and multi-source proof. Now, that was a bit frustrating, but when you are held to those standards or the article doesn't get published, then you better do your work and you better have your facts. As a result of that, we had more fact-checking, more verification of my articles than any other journalist I'm aware of in American history, because most journalists have not published 700 articles, 300 major ones, and 58 cover stories. One led to a 60 Minutes piece, another led to 2 Emmys, and a 2020 piece produced by Judy Moses on my work on Stanislaw Brzezinski. Everything I do must have that same in-depth critical and objective analysis. So when we share something with you, it's got substantial accuracy behind it, and it will withstand cross-examination in a trial. That's the standard we use. It's not just a bunch of opinions bantered about. So I share that with you because sometimes think, well, you know, how can we trust the information? Verify it, and then you'll see. So I have a lot of new stuff coming. In fact, tomorrow, an original, in-depth investigative report. It'll be in 3 parts. Part 1 tomorrow on the politics behind sugar and how, with all the science in the world, if you had 20 million studies, every single one showing that sugar would kill you, it wouldn't mean a damn thing to anyone. The consumers wouldn't stop using it. The doctors wouldn't stop in telling people to eat the diet with sugar. The government wouldn't ban it. The media wouldn't expose it. Why? I'll explain. That's what the article is about. And that's fully footnoted. It'll be read tomorrow by me on the air, plus it'll be posted on our website. Now, when it comes to green tea, there are thousands of studies, really good studies, on green tea. And this latest one is from 2 universities, 3, University of Minnesota, University of Pittsburgh, and the University of Southern California. And here's what they found, and I'll quote it. "Taking green tea supplements for 1 year may slash total cholesterol and LDL cholesterol levels in postmenopausal women." We're talking about tens of millions of women. And the moment a woman goes postmenopausal, boy, does that rate of heart attack and stroke increase phenomenally. And also, there's no warning signs. No pain in the chest, across the arm, down the side. No numbness, no tingling, no dizziness, no sweats. You just die. That's how bad it is. So anything we can do to save a woman's life, or any life, we have a moral obligation to do, I believe. So start using green tea. Now, the decaffeinated time is fine. quote, "The cholesterol-lowering effect were found even stronger in women with higher baseline levels of total cholesterol." Quote, "Current evidence from this trial suggests that green tea extract may be recommended for cholesterol lowering, in particular in those with borderline or higher cholesterol concentrations." And this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Quote, "Green tea is an inexpensive, easily accessible, and popular drink and may indirectly lead to lower mortality and morbidity rates due to cholesterol lowering through hyperlipidemia outcomes," end quote. We're talking about 200 milligrams at a time, maybe 5 a day, 1,000 milligrams. In this study, they were looking at the bioactive catechins, and at 843 milligrams, so if you're at 1,000 milligrams, you're right where you need to be. So help lower your cholesterol, help save your life, help prevent a heart attack and stroke. Take your green tea each day. Now, from Oregon State University, published in Nature Communications, they find that the immune system uses your gut bacteria to control your blood sugar level. This is important new research. I'll quote this. "Researchers at Oregon State University and other institutions have discovered an important link between your immune system, gut bacteria, and glucose metabolism, a crosstalk, an interaction that can lead to type 2 diabetes metabolic syndrome when not functioning correctly. The better understanding of these systems, researchers say, may lead to new probiotic approaches to diabetes and other diseases." Now, here's what it means in lay language. It means that we now know that we actually have two brains. We have the brain we're all familiar with in our skull, but we also have a brain composed of over 100 billion probiotics in our gut. And these talk to one another. In fact, all the bacteria in the body talk with one another. There's a communication that goes on. So if you want to keep your immune system strong, then you have to take in the good probiotics and stay away from things like sugar and alcohol and meat and refined carbohydrates that produce bad bacteria, that alter the bacteria. Because when you alter the bacteria, you alter the conversation they have. So to help a person overcome candida and yeast infections and gas and bloating and inflammation in the gut manifesting as diverticulitis, spastic colon, Crohn's disease, ileitis, you have to cleanse the intestine, which is not that difficult. Some simple ways of doing it, just give up all the sugars and go to a high, complex, plant-based diet, starting in the morning for most people. I'm always having to weigh, when I share something, the ideal, which may be 1% of the population is capable of doing, and what is acceptable, which would be most of the other people. You start making something too difficult, you've just lost that audience. They're not going to do anything. So always allow for a curve. So a person decides where on the curve they're going to start their journey and how disciplined, how inclusive they will be. And as long as you're making improvement, as long as you're going forward, eliminating harmful things, including positive things, then one day you wake up and you're pretty much along in that curve. So it took you 6 months or a year. That's still okay. Better than you did nothing and continued negative things. So if you start the day with a steel-cut oatmeal, or it's also called Scottish oatmeal, and it's a chewy oatmeal, very, very gelatinous. And then you add in some cinnamon. That's good for your blood sugar. You add in some anise or fennel. That's good for your digestion. You can add in berries of any kind or a combination of as many as you want. In fact, a good thing you can do, let's take one day a week where you might have some extra time, maybe a Saturday or a Sunday. Get every kind of berry you can, ideally organic. You wash them. Then you blend them. Don't juice them. Blend them. And then in that blend, put some vitamin C. That acts as a natural preservative. and squeeze the juice of one or two lemons. That actually stabilizes the nutrients. Now you've got this slush. You've got this like a Surrey. And maybe made, for me it'd be a gallon. But maybe you might want to do less. Maybe a quarter too. And then each morning you take maybe a cup and you put that in the hot oatmeal and you stir it in. Now that's giving you 1,000 different phytonutrients, antioxidants. Put in some nut butter or nuts, seed or seed butter like sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, hemp seeds. And that's really empowers it. Now you've got this wonderful nutrient-rich food to start your day. You can either do it as a edible or as a drinkable, as a smoothie. But that's going to cut back your cholesterol level tremendously. You're going to have good probiotics in there. Put some coconut on also. And now your gut is cleaned out. You're getting a lot of fiber. That fruit is a tremendous fiber. Just there are some people when you watch them clean, you know, wow, they're doing a good job. I mean, they're in every little nook and cranny, they've got a toothbrush with hydrogen peroxide, and they're getting everything out of there. And other people, you know, they look at it and say, it's not that dirty. How do you know it's not that dirty? I cleaned it last year. You mean the sink, the dish, the cup? Well, yeah. So if I were to go over there and look at that sink or cup you used, you tell me you washed it a year ago and it's okay? Well, I haven't died from it. So there are relative degrees of cleanliness. I happen to be on that extreme side of cleanliness. But I wouldn't say that much for some of my friends. But I'll tell you this, if ever I'm infected with Ebola virus, or I'm going to go right over to my friend's house and drink something out of any dish because I know I'll be cured because the cure is resting in there. But hygiene isn't big for a lot of people. It should be because, wow, does that really help? When you've got good hygiene, you got good bacteria going on in your body. So that's how you clean your gut. Then you want to really purge. Let's say you want, I want to do a little more aggressive, Gary. Fine, let's get aggressive. Let's get you a green juice with some ginger, about an ounce, lemon juice, about an ounce, about a teaspoon of Manuka honey. Let's also put some Pau D'Arco in there, about 100 milligrams, which is really terrific as an antibacterium. Let's put a little bit of maybe 10 drops of colloidal silver. Then let's give you about 16 ounces of green apple with parsley, broccoli, kale. Now you got a really powerful purge. And you'll feel it. And you'll cleanse. And that's what you want. And the aloe vera in there will soothe it, and as will the coconut oil, and help heal that inflammation. And finally, we got to look at the citrus. Citrus is just wonderful for a lot of different reasons. The newest research that I could find shows that there's an extract within the citrus fruit that can block the action of what is called gallicin 3, a protein that is at excessive levels and that can support the growth of cancer and the onset of heart and kidney disease. And while scientists have been unable to develop drugs to effectively block that, turns out that modified citrus pectin can hold the key to blocking and inactivating it, even reversing the damage. So why does this gallicin 3 turn destructive inside the human body? It's produced naturally in the body, and it can function as both a hero and a culprit. Although it's needed for tissue growth and repair, researchers have long known that excessive levels are a biomarker for degenerative disease and strongly associated with heart failure and kidney disease and cancer. The fact is that this element is more than a mere indicator of potential disease. Researchers now believe that it actively encourages the growth and spread of cancer, as well as the development of harmful inflammation and scarring of the tissue and organs. And it functions to induce the inflammation and immune response that help to destroy invading pathogens after tissue damage. It causes, in case of injury or infection, it helps seal off the affected area by creating chronic inflammation. But that then backfires when excessive scarring or inflammation interferes with the function of the tissue and then the organ dies. So in comes something that can change that, and that is modified citrus pectin, or MCP. That's a complex carbohydrate. It's similar to a natural pectin found in fruits, and it contains sugar molecules called galactosides. Now, these galactosides allow it to bind with the enzyme, and it then neutralizes it, so it, in effect, it turns it down like a flame so that the tissue can heal. So now, one way you can help yourself is making sure that you're getting some modified citrus pectin. And by the way, also for great anti-inflammatory that we don't use in our society and we should, cat's claw. It's terrific, especially if you have cancer. Let's just understand a basic. Inflammation is actually initiated by your body as a mechanism for healing. And when this response becomes chronic, it may be a factor for cancer proliferation at the DNA level. For example, many cancers of the breast show evidence of specific genetic signatures for inflammation. And epidemiological studies find that nearly 15% of all cancer cases worldwide are associated with some kind of chronic infection. Like Kaposi sarcoma, a cancer that leads to lesions in soft tissue, is directly connected to the herpes virus, and the gastric cancer has been linked to chronic inflammation caused by Helicobacter pylori in the gut. Even when a specific infection condition is not present, scientists since the mid-1800s have speculated about the role inflammation plays in cancer. Well, cat's claw, especially the Uncaria, affects cancer cells in a powerful way by turning off the production of a substance called tumor necrosis factor alpha. That's a messenger molecule for inflammation. And according to some research at Louisiana State University Medical Center, it also inhibits nuclear factor kappa beta. Now, that's not a sorority at Harvard. This is your inflammatory switch for cancer. And for years, researchers have known about cat's claw, but they just haven't used it. They know it boosts the T-cell counts in the immune system after chemotherapy. In fact, every single one of the 1,200 people who had full-blown AIDS or AIDS-related conditions that I work with for years, 7 days a week, generally 50 hours a week, every single one of them I had on cat's claw, on other therapies as well, but that's because I knew that it would help with their T-cell activity and stimulate natural immune response. Scientists have known about cat's claw's ability to induce cancer cell death directly, and they just haven't used it. We should, so just remember that. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Okay, so your heart broke. You sit around moping, crying, crying. You say you even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this.
Everybody plays a fool sometimes.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We try to hit on the issues that are important to you. I promise that I'm going to do some things very specifically to help our movement, the movement being a movement to energize and work together at the local level throughout the country on issues that we can make a difference. We don't have to rely exclusively upon a body politic or a particular personality within that body politic. So where most people who are now angry, who are in the Democratic body politic, they're angry for having lost to Trump. There won't be any irony that they contributed to it. That of all the people in the world that you could have run who are really qualified, have a lot of good values, and would have not have had any of the negativity that Hillary brought, you chose not to have that person. And that's because Hillary ingratiates, along with Bill and the Democratic group, a whole lot of people. Hundreds of thousands of people are in that machinery, including many in the media. So now you just kind of feel depressed, angry, angst-ridden. And the same is true for those who feel, gee whiz, we have someone in office now we voted for. We may not like him at his personality level, but he promised to do things. Will he actually do them? And a lot of people don't appreciate that very few people in our society understand most of the interlocking connections between issues. So, for example, if I were to suggest that John Bolton, that you see all the time on Fox News, different people, and he's always praised, do you know anything about this man? Do you know what would happen if he were to become Secretary of State instead of Giuliani? No. Do you want peace in the Middle East? Yes. He isn't going to give it to you. Do you want America to have a war with Russia or Iran? No. Well, he's one of the advocates, along with Hillary Clinton, to expanding NATO. Do you want a larger, more aggressive NATO? Do you want the funds to go to NATO and wars in the Middle East of aggression? Or would you rather see that money spent on getting people work by reindustrializing America, but not at the large level? I believe in the micro economy of the future, not the macro. I believe that we are far better off if we begin to build small economies, working with and helping subsidize small business people with different ideas, as long as they are willing to hire people at a living wage and good working conditions. And we could put millions upon millions of people back to work in our own country. But to do that, you have to understand how everything is connected. You bring one person into a cabinet who's going to advocate to reinstitute the Trans-Pacific Partnership, just change it. They're masters of lying to the people by changing the way that it's spoken about as if we need it. Think of how many union members believe that NAFTA would be good because many of the union leaders told their rank and file it would be good. Had they done their homework, they would have seen it was disastrous. Well, shouldn't that be repealed? Shouldn't we repeal all treaties and then only create a treaty where the average worker has a say-so, their representatives? Yeah. Well, if you keep these small group of people in power in either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, you're never going to have anything you need. Because look over the last 32 years. Show me any example in the last 32 years where the world is a safer place. It is not. Where you have more privacy and more rights and freedoms. You don't. You have less. Where you had a time in America where you're not considered an enemy of the state because you were protesting. Today you absolutely are. You're on a government watch list. Where the quality of our children's care was better. It's worse. Where you had fewer people on food stamps, more children able to eat throughout a day. We have less. We have more people on food stamps, more 18 million kids going to bed hungry. Where people had security within their home, they have less security. So both parties have failed. My suggestion, completely, totally abolish both parties and have a wide group of independent parties coming forward who have a chance to have their platforms and their ideals shared with us. Let me now share a couple things, because throughout history there have been people who've been in power, and we like to think those people are, you know, they're the smart ones. No, they're not. There's some very brilliant, good people in history. Benjamin Disraeli became prime minister and co-creator of the British Conservative Party, and only British prime minister who was Jewish. And throughout his career, he was also a novelist, a man of letters and literature. He held a career in private business, and he held a deep interest in Eastern religious values. He wasn't perfect, but imagine if there would have been a royalist giving counsel to Queen Victoria. Who do I feel was the brightest in all the Kennedys? Bobby Kennedy. There's no question about that. Far brighter than his brother. And he emerged and evolved into a social populist. and he was his brother's counselor. Henry Wallace, that was FDR's second vice president, a forgotten visionary on both foreign and domestic issues in U.S. political history, a true progressive, a statesman who urged normalization of relations with the Soviet Union, later left the Democratic Party and ran for president in the Progressive Party after against Truman. He was a firm believer in the social gospel of civil justice and activism. And by the way, his grandfather was a radical Presbyterian minister. And then you had Charles Maurice de Talleyrand. He was the man who was the power behind Napoleon. Now, Napoleon was very similar in many characteristic ways of Donald Trump in his personality, a complete narcissist, brilliant strategist. But Charles was his foreign minister, and Charles was always thinking, what can we do when Napoleon makes a mistake that could become a disaster for the French people? How can we negate that? So he was always working behind Napoleon, and even when Napoleon found out about it, he frequently didn't go after him because he knew this guy's smart, and he's got the interest of the French people at heart. Then you had a lot of brilliant bad people. You know, it's easy to look at history and say, gee whiz, you know, under Hitler, Hitler was a functional illiterate. But there were some brilliant minds, philosophers, men of letters. That didn't make them good people. It just meant that they were brilliant bad people, like General Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox. He was a historian. He was a strategic genius, one of the smartest people in war in history. He was an expert in the Middle East and Africa. And later he was implicated in the plot to assassinate Hitler and was forced to take cyanide and kill himself. Rudolf Hess, the deputy Führer who flew a solo mission to Scotland to negotiate peace with the United Kingdom, he was taken prisoner. He was a scholar in geopolitics at the time, University of Munich, and he was knowledgeable in Arabic and fluent in Arabic, and he was a brilliant mathematician. But he was brilliant in a bad way. And then, of course, one of the most brilliant bad people of all times was Yelu Chu Chai. You don't know who he is? He's Genghis Khan's closest advisor. Let me tell you how important it was. Genghis Khan was not the brightest guy, but he was bold, and he would have utterly destroyed all of China. He saw it as being no more valuable than a place to graze his horses. It was Wailu who turned China into a Mongolian empire. And you had Rasputin, the man behind Tsar II. You had, today you have great minds. You have Pope Francis. I consider him one of the greatest minds on the planet. He's also a scientist. You have Spinoza. I believe Spinoza was to have had one of the highest IQs in history. He laid down the foundations for the Age of Enlightenment, when science and politics and economics make great strides against the status quo of the church. Needless to say, he was not a friend of the church. You had Erasmus, the early Dutch humanist and social critic who advocated tolerance during the Reformation age when Catholics and Protestants were at each other's throats. You had the British philosopher and economist John Stuart Mill, the father of modern liberalism, who argued for individual freedom within an open economy. You had Goethe, arguably recognized one of the most brilliant men in history. He was thought to have an IQ over 220, a poet, novelist, politician, philosopher, geologist, natural scientist. Thomas Paine, clearly the most underrated founding father. He was a free spirit, a free thinker, political activist, philosopher, and revolutionary. And he wrote Common Sense and Rights of Man. And one of the first person to argue for the abolishing of slavery in 1775. He was the secretary of the Congressional Committee for Foreign Affairs. And you also had one, in my personal opinion, one of the greatest people in history. He was a rabbi. He was a physician. He was a Sephardic scholar. Maimonides. And though he was not really involved in the political sphere at all, but he cared about people. So today, when you think, oh, it's Barack Obama, or it's Bill Clinton, or it's Hillary Clinton, or it's George Bush, or it's Donald Trump, no, it is not. We have got to get beyond this idea that these individuals, in and of themselves, are the cause or the solution to anything. They are not. Because we have giant technocratic bound agencies that then come forward and tell the person, you're new to Washington, let me show you what to do, here's who's going to help you, here's the selection you should make. And then one day you no longer make decisions, like Ronald Reagan was such an imbecile, and he really was. Sorry to, you know, to inform the Republicans of that. His concept of balancing budget didn't work. He said that he would rather, given a choice, of putting that back into the American economy and building infrastructure, or putting it in the military industrial complex, complex to protect us, he put it in the latter and caused a huge budget. Well, show me exactly how putting all that money into an overflowing budget of the Defense Department, where we desperately needed infrastructure. So he didn't hire people, and he promoted the idea that let the private sector guide you. They'll always do it better. That is not true. Trickle down never trickles any further than the corporate profit bottom line. It does not trickle down to the average person. But in any case, these people surround themselves with people who are either good or not so good at the moral level, the character level, the spiritual level, the intellectual level of how to do something in the public interest. The trouble is we have seen no one, and I mean not a single human being can I point to in any administration for the last 32 years who did anything that actually made the world a better place in a selfless way or stood up and challenged, even risking being fired for speaking truth to power. So you have people who I consider very dim. The Clintons are two of the dimmest people in the world. Don't confuse the fact that they have been successful with how brilliant they are. They've surrounded themselves with brilliant strategists, protectors, defenders, apologists, and propagandists. And hence they've created the perfect illusion. You know, the difference is when we go to a movie and you say, what kind of horror film do you want to see? Well, I want really scary. Really scary? What if there's no real scare at all? Well, then I don't want to see it. So we go to a horror film to be scared, to be frightened. And then you're sitting there in the movie and you hear everybody screaming. Now turn on the lights, turn off the movie and say, do any of you really feel threatened? It's just an illusion. You know, it's not going to hurt you. We go into spectacle with the assumption of being stimulated as passive voyeurs and participants at the emotional level, but we know we are not going to be affected by the falsity of wrestling. We know it's all fraud, but it's an entertaining fraud that people accept. So much of what we do, we assume, is an illusion. But we've always assumed that politics was real. Politics is no more real than a horror movie. You may feel something based upon the personalities, the punditry, the elocution, but it's not real. They will never show you the truth of what goes on behind the scenes. And that's why, for example, Barack Obama, every single promise he made, he lied and betrayed you. You would think that that would cause him to have a low appeal level. No, he has a very high acceptance level. Even after the country is far worse, the world is far less safe, people's rights are far less protected. And he has no character at all, but he will be like, just like Bill Clinton. If Bill Clinton had sex with every third woman in America, it would not have impacted his reputation at all. In fact, I'm not sure he didn't. This guy is, someone ought to take a gene out of him. Well, I mean, how can you get away with all this and still be liked? Because we're attracted to the illusion. And when we want someone to be something that they have no capacity to be, then they have to pretend that they're something they're not, and we have to pretend that they are something they are not. So we live with these illusions. But there's a danger when we don't see the game we're in. So clearly the Democratic Party, that's supposed to represent everything that the people care about, they don't. And it shows by the person they chose. With all the choice they had, they chose the wrong one. When it should have told you something when Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton both promoted and supported the Glass-Steagall Act, which was purely then that's when the Democratic Party officially became the Party of Wall Street. And then when NAFTA was created and all those 1,300,000 union jobs were lost, then that meant that, gee whiz, that became the Party of Wall Street. And then the pharmaceutical industry did not have any effort to repeal under any administration, Democrat or Republican, the high cost of drugs for Medicare and Medicaid. Then pharmaceutical become the official industry of the Democratic Party. And then when the banking community got bailed out, but the average person didn't, and no small business person did, then Wall Street became the official Wall Street banking community of the Democratic Party. And the big industries that pollute, coal, and they became the official industries of the political party. So at some point, wouldn't it have made sense for the people who were believing this to stop believing in the illusion, look at the reality and say, we need to start new third parties. We should let these parties go and start real parties. And that's what Ralph Nader was trying to do. That's what Jill Stein was doing and still is. That's why you have people like Michael Hudson today saying, you know, get rid of the Democratic Party. And that's why we have to let go of the illusion that these parties care about us. They don't. You may believe in the personality of the person running it, but that person's there for themselves. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe when we were trying to stop the pipeline a year and a half ago, and there were about 500 people holding arms with Bill McKibben and Chris Hedges around the White House, maybe at that moment the president said, now I have a chance to do something. I'm going to go out there and tell the Capitol Police, don't arrest these people. Invite them in. At least invite the major spokesperson for him. Let's have a conversation. No, he stood there and watched as they were all arrested. So shouldn't have that told the media something? It did not. Shouldn't have told the pundits something? It did not. Shouldn't have told the rest of America when we just had the Native Americans standing up. Did you see any of the politicians out there? No. No. Shouldn't that tell you a great deal? When was the last time a politician stood up to Israel for its occupying of the Palestinian territory and where the peace process stopped a long time ago? They don't. No, that's how you tell one. Let me tell you some of the ones that are coming your way you should know about. First off, if Donald Trump's going to drain the swamp, then he first has to recognize what a swamp is. Donald, the fact that you gold-plated the swamp doesn't make it any less septic. Michael Corby, K-O-R-B-E-Y, he's one of your choices for Social Security transition. Do your homework. He's a former lobbyist who spent his career fighting for Social Security cuts. For the Economic Transition Team, David Malpass, M-A-L-P-A-S-S, former chief economist at Bear Stearns, which received $13 billion in taxpayer bailouts. So someone who failed in recognizing or changing the economic standards, you're going to bring into your Economic Transition Team? That makes as much sense as saying that the Titanic sank because there was too much water in the North Atlantic. I wouldn't bring in the captain of the Titanic to run a cruise ship. Doesn't make sense. Treasury Secretary, you're looking at, one of the people you're looking at is Steve Mnuchin, M-N-U-N-C-H-I-N. Why would you want a Treasury candidate who worked at Goldman Sachs for 17 years, lobbied to make it easier for banks to force out homeowners, make them homeless? So you're going to put a person into your swamp that is a person that is abusive to homeowners, insensitive? You want a transition leader in J. Stephen Hart, a lobbyist for Pfizer? And exactly how is that going to help us lower prices of drugs? And you want an EPA transition person, and that is to be Myron Ebell, E-B-E-L-L. Didn't he chair the Cooler Heads Coalition, whose mission is, quote, dispelling the myths of global warming? So you're going to put a person ahead of the Environmental Protection Agency who's a complete environmental denialist, denying all the science. Okay. And your federal communication transition person is to be Jeffrey Eisenach, I-E-I-S-E-N-A-C-H. Wasn't he a consultant with Verizon? Now, I'm just giving you some of the transition people. So remember two things. Right now, the only people that he is considering for important positions are all swamp dwellers. These people are so adept at living in the complete, corrupt, total cesspool of Washington, D.C., that they've learned how to hold their breath and breathe out their ears. All of them. So, Donald, you want to swim with those people? Then here's what's going to happen. I predict that you will not last 2 years as President of the United States. It'll be good for your brand, good for your family business, because you could just imagine the deals they're going to be able to make with all the information that they'll have at their beck and call. But very quickly, people will see what kind of complete and total fraud you are. Now, that's assuming that even with the best of intents of bringing back industry into the United States, and some of the things you promised people would have helped a lot of people, you're not about to help any of them. You can't, because you got the wrong people around you. But just so you know, we've sent Donald Trump and his transition team a list of over 200 of the brightest minds in the world who'd be happy to give some outside input, and none of these people will ever be called, because that's not what they want. Let's hear from someone who says maybe it's time we realize that we're getting what we deserve, like it or not.
In just one more day, Americans decide which breed of oppression will transcend their divide. But as they bicker and scold and strike at the nerve, Americans will get the president they deserve. For most of each decade, they guzzle their beer, they suck down their aspartame and function from fear. The grease is delicious, the sugar's a high, our TVs keep blaring as politicians lie. But every 4 years, when their pundits say boo, they suddenly care what their elected masters do. It's Muslims, it's guns, God's under assault. There's always a reason, it's never my fault. But the truth of the matter, sad it may be, is that we're responsible for the chaos we've wreaked. As Americans have touted their freedom and bravery, they've ignored their own country's descent into slavery. Sketchy pills good, healing plans bad. Police states are moral, but dissenting is mad. Children are taught to repeat and obey, while the powers that be rip clean water away. It's okay, we learn, just consume, and we do, until our Black Fridays turn into Black Doom. We know all the Kardashians, not the Federal Reserve, and this is why Americans will get the president they deserve. We bicker over chasms intentionally laid by snaky sociopaths out to get paid. We get wasted on fantasies of our ideal state, and they use our ignorance and cash to sow hate. They hate us because we're free, they told us nonstop, so we went about our lives while their wars popped off. Thanks to their violence, a million are dead, yet we can't get 3,000 out of our heads. Fighter jets and drones turn children to vapor as every explosion incites vengeful anger. But the real problem you see is not just these crimes, but that those chasing power drip from the same slime. No matter which tyrant proceeds to prevail, the American empire is destined to fail. No way, their minions yell, it's me my guy will serve. And this is why Americans will get the president they deserve. One represents the corporo-fascist order, takes their money, drops their bombs, then acts like a martyr. She's every policy that's made America corrupt, and the buyers of influence power erupt. Never Hillary, many Americans scream, a liar, a fraud, she destroyed the American dream. But on the other side lurks an equal danger. One rabid nationalist swears a game changer. He came from America's love of the vile, the arrogance, shaming, materialism, and guile that we claim to loathe because Americans are polite, then proudly excuse because, I mean, you know he's right. One's the Antichrist, the other's a savior. Neither side owns their lesser evil's behavior. He never said that, she'd never dare. They lie to themselves so they don't have to care about the crimes in their name they'll allow to be served. And this is why America will get the president it deserves. But as dark as it is and as shady and crazy, Americans' minds are growing less hazy. They're sick of these pigs and their transparent acts. They're finally starting to care about facts. But until Americans learn it's never their right to dictate to others how to live their lives, the truth of the matter, my heart's heavy to say, is that freedom will wither with each passing day. The flags and the anthems and self-righteous rage will continue to imprison their minds in a cage where we're best no matter the truth, where voting is all American must do, where fear's all you need to impose your beliefs, and if I don't like it, leave. There's hope, it's true, the evolution's begun. History proves all empires come undone. Those who seize power can never retain it. Our innate drive for freedom will always contain it. Yet until most Americans adapt to that curve, I promise, I'm sorry, we'll get the president we deserve.
Something to think about. And also I would add this in. If you are a senior citizen who've worked your whole life, you've worked nobly, you've been a productive member of your community, you've raised your children as best you can, and now when you think that you want to spend a little time and quality of life on yourself, you find that you cannot pay your mortgage, you cannot pay your kids' debt that you co-signed on, or you don't have enough money for medicines or foods, and you think, shouldn't we have evolved more than this? Shouldn't we be a country that has taken priority, and one of the priorities be our health? Shouldn't we have people in office who promote prevention? There is none. Shouldn't we be putting up holistic assisted living centers in every community in America? We should, but we won't. Shouldn't we be helping people with vocational skills and teaching them how to cope and giving them the tools they need within every community, whether it's rural, whether it's suburban or urban? We should, but we're not. And so one day you go to the cabinet and you realize you're going to have to eat cat food because there's nothing else you can afford. I filmed some of these people for Poverty Inc. So how do you think they're going to vote? They're not going to care about NATO. That's not on their agenda. Eating is paying for a bill that otherwise will turn their house dark. That's important. Now imagine you're a student and you cannot afford the college you're in, irrespective of whether you may or may not be learning what you need to survive in the real world. And then one day you're out of school and 55% of you are at home living with parents because you can't find the work in the area that you got your degree. Think of the pressure. Now what would motivate you? The person that's going to give you free education, a Bernie Sanders, a good thing, or a Trump or Clinton that say no, because they would then have to challenge the big industries that control the charter schools, that control the privatization of our education, that control the debt peonage system. No. So then you go where you feel there is someone who's a true advocate. That's important. So we better take a careful look at all the people who have been at some level adversely affected by the Democrats and the Republicans combined. One does not have exclusivity on its neglect and its disdain. So then we wonder, why did someone vote for one person, not another? No, so many people voted either for Sanders, and had there been a legitimacy, had there not been a corporate takeover of the Democratic apparatchik, those who work within the system for their own gain, Bernie Sanders would be president, and we would have at least 36 positive points that he could be taking that enormous frustration and forming it into optimism. But he didn't take it any further. But that doesn't mean it stops. I'll be bringing three people into my office working 7 days a week on a regular basis to get information that we can use at the local community level to start change. What do I mean? Let me just give you one example. Years ago, there were multiple groups of parents who believed that they were all pro-vaccine, but there was a bad lot of vaccine that injured their child. No one cared. There was no national movement. There was no cleaning up the vaccines. To the contrary, the vaccine makers got their advantage by having a indemnification that no matter how bad the vaccine injury was, they would not have to pay a penny. You couldn't sue them. I went into that community and I spoke with a man in his dying days, and that man was named Harris Coulter. In fact, I found him in an assisted living center down in Washington, D.C. I didn't know where he went. He was just dropped off the map. And in that one evening where I spent hours talking with him, he told me about the mistakes that he had made. And he wished that the, I take this message for you. So Gary, understand something. The vaccine movement has been co-opted by the pharmaceutical companies that have front groups that say, yes, we're concerned about bad vaccines, so we want more research money to create safer vaccines. And he said, but there is no such thing as safe vaccines. So he did the research, and that's what allowed me to look more carefully and in-depth and do the scholarship to do 3 documentaries and 41 articles and lots of lectures on this subject. So today, we now have, because of this and bringing in other doctors who then start picking up on this work and doing their own work, we now have a national movement of probably 4 to 5 million people who are able to influence elections, able at the local level, able to get information out and start challenging the pushback. Our next goal is to challenge mandatory vaccines and then to bring legislation and get it on to the, get it before Congress to take away, strip away the pharmaceutical industry's safety net, get them their indemnification removed. So if there's a bad vaccine of any kind, you can sue the company. Watch how quickly the whole field of vaccines stops because it's a complete fraud and we have the science to prove it. That didn't happen overnight, but it did happen. Just like out in California, there's one county now that the entire county has banned all genetically engineered foods. That didn't happen overnight, but it happened. 60 times a documentary, Seeds of Death, is played in Colorado on the PBS station, and that's led to a whole movement along with multiple articles and other people, Jeffrey Smith and Vandana Shiva, all contributing so we can stop GMOs and get an organic movement going in Colorado. It took years, but it's happening. I would rather see over the next 4 years 5 or 10 very important things that impact all Americans done, so at least we can say, hey, local movements matter. We cannot change the body politic and the Democrats. You cannot reform it. It will not transform itself. There is no catharsis, no epiphany. There's no one good person you're going to bring in and suddenly they're going to clean house. No. When a toilet's completely full and overflowing, you flush it. You don't take a teaspoon and say, let me take that little tiny piece there in the corner away. Ah, now it's okay. No, it's not. The entire body politic in America is corrupt, top to bottom, with hundreds of thousands of enablers and technocrats keeping it that way, irrespective of our own philosophical naivety, to think that somehow someone is going to give up their interest, give up their income, give up their power for the better good. If you know those people, let us know. I gave you the names of some, like Maimonides, Spinoza, who did care about the greater good. We had Gandhi. He created a better good for Indians. And we had Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. They created a better good for everyone. Today, not so much. And certainly not from either of the rank, overflowing, completely septic Democrat Republican parties. Third parties where we have multiple voices, multiple truths working together at every level. But you got to start at the local level and work your way up. And we have the tools to do that. And we're not going to go to sleep. We're going to watch everything going on, and I'll share the insights with you and the calls to actions as we can. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.